Hey everyone, welcome to episode 143 of the Lift Free and Diet Hard podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Coates, coming at you with a couple of quick episodes with a couple of the speakers of our event, the Evolve Strength Business and Coaching Conference in October 13th and 14th, and my good friend, Dr. Sam Spinelli, who had you back quite a while ago, but it's been a little while, so I'm honestly thrilled to have you back. And I mean, people who don't know much about you, you're the co-founder of E3 Rehab, of Citizen Athletics, and I definitely want to talk to you about, you know, your brand, business, media. So thanks for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me on. Looking forward to this.
Always humble for a guy who's been super successful. I mean, I suppose I should get this out of the way. Like, everything's okay. Calm down in Kelowna. You're in the Kelowna area. You guys have been heavily affected by fires. So you guys been good?
Yeah. We had obviously a huge issue for a little while, but things have been generally pretty calm. I think they've got all the fires under control. On this side of the lake, there's no active fire, I believe. And then on the west side, it's pretty minimal now.
Okay, good.
Something that unfortunately we have to kind of deal with when you live here. It happens every few years.
We're getting the smoke again right now in Edmonton, right? We've had probably the smokiest summer that I can remember here in the city, which again, it's unfortunate. So let's get down to business, because you've got a big following, you know, 400,000 Instagram followers, you know, got a lot of subscribers across all your different media, YouTube. And ultimately, like, I have a very positive attitude about evidence-based people with integrity who've built large followings, large brands. I think coaches in our industry, I see lots of this, they get very negative, very sour grapes about people who've built these brands followings. Just, they're talking about the bad faith actors that are attached to the fitness industry, the charlatans, what have you. But what I always get is like a lot of like, it's sour grapes, it's resentment. It's people who crave what they think is the status they would get from doing this, but because they haven't, they feel entitled to it. And they would deny this to their deathbed. But I know this. My attitude is, let's actually like peel back the curtain. Let's give people the skills, the attitudes, so the way, if this is something that they value, because not every coach needs to grow that space, let's give them the tools. So I think the first place to start is like, how much has this helped your business to grow all these big platforms?
Yeah, I'd say it's been a huge component and a challenge, but paid off very well. Yeah. I've been able to develop and grow some large online companies and then also transferred into a pretty successful in-person facility as well. So I think that a lot of times people don't realize A, the amount of work that goes into it, and then B, how much it can pay off if you're willing to stick it out for the long term, because the online game is a long game. It is not short, at least for the vast majority of people. Sure, there's outliers, but most of the time it is hunker down, work for years and years and years, and then people think that you're an instant success.
There's a lot of years that go into it behind, like, for example, how long have you been coaching? How long have you had your doctorate in physical therapy? And how long have you been a competitive athlete?
Yeah, I'd say a competitive athlete, you know, 16, 17 years, something like that, training people for 14, 15 years, and then doctor of physical therapy for 6 years, and then online businesses for similar time.
Right. Like, and people don't necessarily see that, right? They may look at your media and go, oh, this guy's really good at media.
Yeah, no, I was like, I think a lot of people don't realize, and this is true for a lot of coaches that are in the online space that have done well and are respectable people, that usually they were really successful in-person coaches first. Like, that was, you know, my situation. I worked at a performance facility for a long time. I had my own side hustle as well and coached in person for, I don't know, 6-7 years before I even considered online. And I was then just looking to venture out further because I felt like I had done a good job in person and was ready to then start sharing information online.
You did for at least a little bit of time work for the same company I started out in, right? And you actually, if I'm saying this correctly, you were mentored early on by Dean Somerset, who's also one of the speakers in this event, right? And I mean, I don't think there's anybody I've learned more from in the industry than Dean, because I did so much Con Ed within the old company. I've done a lot of his courses and seminars. I don't know if there's a person who's done more of his in-person seminar stuff than me, or it's close. So obviously, what was his impact on you and your career, and who else influenced you along the way?
Yeah, I think that Dean was incredibly influential. I ended up stumbling into him early on at a perfect opportunity where I was still just wrapping up my high school diploma and decided to take my training certification with CanFit Pro, good old CanFit. And Dean was a course instructor. And so then I was at World Health taking the course that he was teaching, and he just blew my mind. He was just, you know, challenging a lot of the paradigms that I had, questioning the way that he was just approaching topics. You know, we'd be discussing something and then he would ask questions, and it would just have me go through this line of critical reasoning, and I just wasn't skilled or prepared for it. And from that, I was like, can I please just come and hang out with you? Can I shadow you? Whatever you're willing to let me do, I got to do it, because I just, there's some sort of huge knowledge gap here. I thought going into that, that I was, you know, a pretty reasonably knowledgeable individual. I understand, yes, I'm in high school, but if you get to know me, I am a voracious reader. When I was in high school, I would literally be reading muscle building textbooks and all this stuff that I could find and get my hands on. And so then going into that course, I thought I was already pretty smart, and he just blew my mind. And at that point, I was needing to get any information I could from him. And he was very gracious and let me come and shadow him weeks on and weeks off. And just, he would give me a lot of time outside of sessions, and it was really beneficial. And, you know, I'm very grateful for that. In addition, like, another person was Barry Butt. I think that you know him. He is a professor at McCune University. Yeah. And I was just so fortunate to, again, go and take a class from him. And, you know, because of the experience I had with Dean, I decided that I wanted to go to university and get more education. And when I took the class that Barry was instructing, I was in a pretty good position where I knew a lot of information and had been experienced already coaching people for almost 2 years at that point. And taking that first class with Barry, he was very kind and said, you know, I see a lot of potential in you, and I think that you would be a great asset working with us at Premier Strength. Do you want to come on for the summer and start coaching some of the youth athletes? And I was like, absolutely. And then from that, I just, you know, showed up every day really early, and he would just let me come and assist with coaching the pros. And that just from there cycled into where I eventually was able to take on and start leading the professional athlete groups.
And then was it 2019 when you and Dean did a seminar together? Was it your first in-person sort of like one day seminar? We did it at Evolve Downtown. Was that in 2019?
Yeah, it could have been 2019. It might have been 2018. I'm not too sure. Might have been 2018. One of those years.
But, you know, one of the cool things is all but one of the speakers of the event. So there are technically 15 speakers, 14 speaking slots. I mean, that includes me, but I've seen everybody present, with the exception of Krista Scott Dixon of PN fame. Krista's a legend. So like, that was cool. And like, I've had a lot of people message me, hey, you know, can I come speak at this event? Blah, 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 all this stuff. And again, I'm like honored so many people want to, but I've actually had the luxury of being able to like choose from such a great array of people, a lot of different disciplines, but people that I personally have seen and go, these people are excellent educators. So it was really cool. I got to be there present for that one day, that first one. And like I said, I'm excited to have you involved in mine. So let's see, where can I go to with this? Let's actually go a little further back into the growth of all the brand and media stuff. Like, obviously mentors played a big role. Any other major foundations, things that led to the brand growth, the following growth, the business growth?
Yeah, I think I had a similar start in a lot of ways to actually yourself, where one of the things that I did early on was, you know, make a basic profile for myself. Then I really focused on, instead of trying to just share information on my page, I reached out to other individuals, other companies, and said, can I write for you? What can I do for you? And my intent wasn't to just grow myself, but to be able to reach a larger audience, share information that I was passionate about. So I wrote on pages like, you know, Tony Genicor's website, Dean's website, anyone that would basically let me. And then that cycled into then when I was able to work with T Nation and then larger companies and just keep ramping that up. And then along the way, I was able to gain recognition for myself by sharing information there, but then also continuing to share information on my personal profiles and eventually my company profiles.
Starting with T Nation was like the absolute foundation of what I would qualify as a brand for me as well. And it was realizing that, okay, I need to embrace social media to support, you know, what I'm doing with T Nation as it grew into some of the other pieces that I wrote for. And then social media sort of started to grow. And I just applied showing up every day, posting something consistently, getting better at it, learning from the feedback, learning from how people were responding to it or not responding to it. And then it kind of took on a life of its own. Now I look at it and go, you know, I still remember thinking, you know, I'm not the sort of person who could have a large social media following. That was a totally foreign thing to me. I looked at people like Spencer Nadolski or Sohee Lee or Lane Norton or Dr. Mike Isertel, you know, obviously very well-educated, very established figures in our space. And I mean, you are friends with some of them. Like you were hanging around with them in California for extended periods of time. And, you know, it's still sort of surreal. But it also reminds me that like anybody listening here, I mean, again, not everybody's going to have the same goals, ambitions, or value this stuff. They won't. But there's a lot of value in it if it aligns with you. And I like sharing, like, listen, this is how I did it. It was slow, painstaking stuff. There was a lot of stuff that pre-existed that I had to put in place. There's, you know, God, I mean, what am I at? I'm somewhere north of 20,000 in-person personal training hours at this point. And, you know, I was pushing very high volumes of training for many, many years, and I still do. And that's where the lessons and the wisdom and the experience comes from, is everything that my clients ask, say, the things I see in front of me. And it just becomes a pretty much an endless array of ideas to write formal articles, you know, quick witticisms for social media, you know, your video content. I mean, how much of your video stuff and rehab stuff is coming from, hey, I work with this person who had this pain. Here's the solution. Here's how you can.
Yeah, pretty much all of it. In person, I'm similar to you. I still have a grind of seeing as many people as I can. Obviously, it's reduced down a lot with the volume of online work that I do, but people have issues and it's not unique to them individually. Like their story is obviously unique, but a lot of people share similar problems, whether it's fitness, rehab, performance, whatever it may be. And they can relate to a similar problem, and being able to share solutions to those problems just seems to be something that I'm good at and I've found success with. And yeah, the best way that I'm able to do it is by still seeing people, talking to people within the community, everything, and then trying to provide a resource for it. Because as helpful as it is for myself to work with someone one-on-one, it doesn't provide a ton of huge return for the greater community. Whereas if I'm able to create a resource that, you know, in some cases, millions of people see, they are going to get a lot more benefit out of it. It's going to help more people. And essentially, that's like where I have tried to shift my focus to.
There's something that I picked up from you along the way, and it always stuck with me. And I really like this framework. I'm going to oversimplify a little bit, but I tend to think of rehab and performance as really the same concept. It's just performances on, there's sort of a U-shaped curve of stimulus is the way you presented it, where too little is not enough. And then there's a sweet spot, and then too much creates a risk of injury, right? It's too much load, it's too much volume, et cetera. And really, rehab is just a regressed back version of it, where the tissue can only tolerate a certain amount of tension, load, et cetera. But in its fullest form, for a healthy joint, healthy person, you really just move that stimulus just to a more intense, you know, end of the performance range. Could you explain that a little bit better than I just did?
Yeah, you're introducing my topic for the seminar. So yeah, welcome in, everybody. Ooh. Essentially, when we start to look at the general goal of rehab, in most cases, it's to help someone get back to whatever task they're looking at. And for the vast majority of people, it's improving their physical capacity in some meaningful way. So for instance, you have a knee injury and it's limiting your ability. Let's just stick with outside of the gym, since most people aren't fitness focused. You know, you're now having a difficult time going upstairs, downstairs, getting up and down off chairs. You have a difficult time going onto your knees. So how do we improve that? Well, if we look at the healthy individual, if you wanted to help that person go up and down stairs, what would you do for them? You would get their legs stronger. Okay. Does that change because the person is in pain? Not inherently. They still can do the same general things. So, you know, some sort of squat type exercise, some sort of step up type exercise, leg extension, whatever it may be, something that targets the quads, the hamstrings, etc. But we need to scale it to a level that the individual is able to A, tolerate, because we don't want it to increase their pain, and then B, something that they're capable of handling and doesn't exceed the tissue's capacity, so it doesn't lead to more injury. So what does that look like? Well, you essentially just take whatever you would do with the healthy person in a lot of cases and regress it to the level that the person is then able to handle. So that might be, you know, changing the variation, might be changing the load, might be changing the range of motion, the tempo, some sort of variable. And there are ways you can narrow down which option might be best. That's something I want to discuss in the seminar and guide people on how do you actually adjust this across the body, because how I change stress for the knee versus the hip versus the ankle are similar from a concept standpoint. But when you actually apply it in practice, a lot of people can be overwhelmed, not really sure how to do that. So how can we simplify it by general principles? So for instance, like with the knee versus the hip, having a more vertical shin versus more angled shin and things like that can help individuals understand how to differentiate stress on different parts of the body and guide a way that you can help individuals who are in pain. And, you know, for your average trainer, they might not be doing this from a standpoint of quote unquote rehab, because obviously they're not the rehabilitation specialist, but they can be an intermediary where they're able to support the individual in improving their overall health, their well-being, possibly reducing their pain, but they're just not focusing on that because it's not their place. And I think that if you apply the framework appropriately and you understand the law, you can be a really helpful individual for a lot of people, because most human beings have pain. They experience pain at different points. They might not have it all the time, but a common problem that personal trainers deal with is that someone gets some sort of ache or pain, and then the person A, doesn't want to train because they don't want to deal with it, doesn't want it to get worse, etc. Or B, they ditch out on training because they're going to go and do rehab. And so if you understand these sort of concepts and principles, you're able to keep the person training, keep your client, keep your sessions, and in my experience, make the person even happier because they're able to get a lot more benefit from your sessions with you.
I actually, something that's related to this is I built a resource that like I've been working on for a while, and I think is one of the, like, I hadn't found this resource in one place. So I built it for Kabuki Strength, and it's all a lot of the research on cross education. So that's, you know, how, let's say we've all dealt with clients with an immobilized limb, right? Broken, busted ankle, broken wrist, whatever else is going on. I've had tons of them over the years, torn bicep, et cetera. And what do we do as trainers? Well, we figure out that we have two choices. That person just doesn't come in at all, or we train everything else that's healthy and can do stuff. So let's say you've got a broken arm. Well, trainers figure out usually either oh, that, okay, we could still train legs. Awesome. Cool. That's great. Let's prioritize legs. But then you get into this research. It's like, wait a second. If we actually train the healthy arm, we're not going to end up with this like shriveled atrophied arm and this like big Popeye limb. Quite the opposite. In fact, the neural stimulus, which is not 100% understood mechanistically, but we know it's nervous system related, actually helps spare the muscle strength and muscle thickness of the injured limb, right? Like if you've got a very, very high level bodybuilder and they break their femur, guess what? This is not going to have their muscle stay 100% intact. That's a pipe dream. That's not how this works. But it's going to be a whole lot better that if you didn't train at all, that you get all of the metabolic health, the mental health benefits of keeping someone training. So I grabbed all that stuff, built it together, and I built here's a program for upper body and lower body if you have an injured arm. And here's a program for upper body and lower body if you have an injured leg, conditioning assignments all in one place. If anybody wants this, trainers, guys, this thing is great. But this is just literally figuring it out, merging with the research. So there's so much that you can do. And if you keep that person in the gym, again, they get all the metabolic health benefits, all the mental health benefits. And again, you as the coach have a client who's still working with you. That's big too, right? Selfishly, but that's big.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really cool. I didn't know that you made that resource. I'll have to check it out.
I will send it to you. I think you'll, and I want your critique of it as well, because I do feel it's really good. Now let's pivot a little bit, because I love physical therapists in our space who have built big brands and used it to educate the fitness industry as a whole. So I would say traditionally, and this is not just true of physical therapists, this is true of, you know, trainers, writers, what have you. Like, let's use Dean Somerset as an example, who kind of came before us. Dean had T-Nation and then writing through for a lot of other publications. Because social media was nowhere near where it is right now, then the people, ultimately the editors, these entities were ultimately the gatekeepers of who became these brandable individuals. Now, oftentimes the qualified people, your Lane Norton starts writing for bodybuilding.com because he's on the forums, right? The smart people are getting into these things because they're qualified, but there's sort of a limitation and a gatekeeping of just who established themselves as brands. You get a guy like Quinn Hennick, who's a doctor of physical therapy, came to prominence through Juggernaut, for example. Tim DeFrancesco is another one of my favorites. Brought him into T-Nation later, but he was the strength and conditioning coach of the LA Lakers for 6 years, right? Like, Tim, great dude, owns a gym in Salem, Mass, et cetera. If anyone wants to listen, I've had Quinn and Tim on my podcast in the past. So, and then I think some people rose to prominence on YouTube. There's some people who, like Charlie Weingroff, who work with a lot of famous athletes, that sort of stuff. And I was curious on your thoughts about how social media has kind of removed the gatekeeper and opened the doors for another generation of physical therapists to grow brands. And then there's obviously pros, because some great people now have access to that, but also the cons of just anybody's out there. So do you want to tackle that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you brought up a great point. And at face value, more information is beneficial because you get more people out there sharing hopefully quality information. That means more people are seeing it, getting people generally more help. And that's great. However, a problem does come. Like, gatekeepers can be a deterrent for quality individuals, but they're also limiting crappy information. So there is that benefit to it. Like, funny story for a lot of people that don't know, I actually tried to write for T-Nation when I was even younger. And I do think that I had a good piece, but they said, you know what? It's just not up to our standard. And I respected that. And, you know, I worked on making it better. And eventually they did actually accept the publication. But with social media, you don't inherently have that requirement. And when you look at something like academic literature and publications and journals, there's something called peer review. And having individuals assess and critique your writing is usually beneficial because it can point out flaws that are in it, whether that's major or minor, and it just improves the quality of it overall. Social media removes that necessity because we don't inherently have peer review pre-post. You know, like in the work that I've done with E3 Rehab, we had that where we would create content individually. We would then peer review it, go through it, improve it, and continue on that cycle until it was ready for sharing. With something like the average person's Instagram, they don't do that. They just write down whatever thoughts that they have and boom, share it, and then it's out to the world. After the fact, you might have individuals review it and give feedback, and it's in the comments, but that doesn't necessarily change the impact that it has. It's really common to see someone post something and then there'll be tons of comments, but people don't inherently go and read all the comments. I don't know about you, but I've dealt with that with my wife, where she sent me something and I'm like, seems suspicious. And you just like open up the comments and it's just littered with people crapping on it. And she's like, oh, well, I didn't look at that. And it's really common with social media in general. And so that's one thing that I do have a concern with, because yeah, like there's been a huge rise of tons of great individuals. Like, you brought up some people that have been mentors for me, like Quinn. He was one of my early mentors in physical therapy. And I've talked to Tim. He's a great guy. And there's been lots of other individuals who have rose to prominence and are fantastic individuals creating excellent resources. But at the same time, there's a lot of pretty crappy individuals out there that have gained a huge following sharing either A, information that is not great, or B, actual information that is harmful. And that's kind of the challenge with it, where social media is wonderful because anyone can have a voice, anyone can have a crowd, but it's not necessarily the best information.
You've, like, I'm not gonna say any names because I generally don't do that, but you're first of all, you're the person that I tend to point people to who walks the line between positive evidence-based sharing of information, right? And I've got a few contacts and some friends in the physical therapy world that they were worse, but they had this habit of like just bombastic, like attack mode on anything that they disagreed with when they saw it online. And they like you and respect you. They just take a different tack. Whereas I prefer your tack. Now I've had some influence on one of them and I think he's mellowed a little bit because he sees the big picture of this stuff. But at the same time, I've actually learned a ton from them because they call out a lot of rubbish. I do remember a video, and if someone wants to dig around, they will find it. We'll know who we're talking about. You have a video where you actually do debunk one well-known figure who I think shares a lot of like rubbish and has built a brand around a particular idea that's not well supported by research. But outside of that, you've generally speaking taken the high road, which I actually respected. Like, I will shout someone who I like and respect. He's not everybody's cup of tea, is Adam Meekins, because Adam has made a whole thing about, like, what is it, calling out the silly bullshit in the industry. And he is pure fire and bombast. But I get along with Adam, and I learned a lot from him. And I've actually shifted some of my beliefs and my knowledge base because I value what he does. I have not agreed with everything he's called out. I think there have been some instances where I think he's been a little overzealous. I would say that to him directly, where I think maybe he was being a bit pedantic on that particular one. But I think his net effect is really good. Not everybody likes him because, well, he'll call people on their bullshit. But I find that me personally, I have a lot of bandwidth for following and absorbing a broader array of people. It's a valuable skill that allows me to do things like find great podcasts, guests, share people and resources with other people, find speakers at my events, support other events with helping them find great speakers. For the person who does not have my bandwidth, do you have any general recommendations about who are, you can name specifically, we've already named a few, great resource, great people, or other hallmarks, green flags versus red flags about, you know, because a lot of the people listening are coaches, who are going to be valuable resources when it comes to the rehab, the physical therapy space?
Yeah, usually one of the first things I say is you're looking for individuals who are able to explain something that might seem complicated in relatively simple terms. If they're using very large, questionable words that don't have well-defined meanings, or they're applying those words poorly, that is a big sign. That's one of the things that I saw early on when I was still a student in physical therapy, and I would be looking at information online that was being shared, and I would see various individuals putting out content, and they would just use large words like neuromodulation and try to use that as a form of, you know, increasing the impact of whatever they were saying or to justify whatever their purpose was. So that's one point. Another one is if you see very distinct adamant sayings like this is always bad, like, you know, rounding your back in a deadlift is always bad, you know, there's a time and place where it might not be appropriate, and there's a time and place where it might be. There's always context that dictates the relevancy of these things, and individuals who are able to provide context are usually individuals that are more worthy of your time and attention. So that's two strong ones. Beyond that, it's a bit tricky. I would say go and look at the quality of the posting. If whatever they're sharing, whether it's a YouTube video, Instagram, do they have consistent information that goes in and discusses stuff versus just sharing, hey, here's three great exercises that cure blank? Because usually that's just not how things work. It's a lot more complicated. There's nuance to things. Like, for instance, you mentioned Adam. While I don't agree with Adam on everything, like you said, and I do think that the way that he shares stuff, while I do find it enjoyable at times, I personally can't do that.
Yep.
He usually brings up people that are sharing information in a way that is taking advantage of the appeal to the crowd, things that are going to be controversial and draw people in. So if you see individuals sharing information that is controversial for the sake of it, that can often be a red flag. Like, I don't want to call anyone out, but there's a company that's out there that specifically tries to have their thumbnails and covers on images be things that are very controversial because they know that it's going to draw people in. They generally don't share great quality information. So those are things you can watch for and hopefully know that you shouldn't trust their information. Another thing is if you comment and get responses from the individuals and they're able to provide good information, like obviously go and comment with good intentions. Don't come and attack the person, but ask them, like, can you explain any of this information? Can you explain what you're talking about? Ask in a positive light, give them the benefit of charity. And if they respond, assess that. Like, are they able to explain the rationale behind it? Obviously, no one is required to respond to comments, which is challenging, but hopefully they're able to come in and explain things. I try to do that myself. I know, not to come back to Adam, but he does that. He'll come in. Sometimes he comes aggressively, but he still comes in and explains things. Yeah, and like a lot of the individuals that are out there with the intent to share information in a positive way will usually come back and continue that discussion. Even when people are challenging me and come in and, you know, are kind of dicks about it, I still come in and try to have that conversation with them, because a lot of times it might be that they're misunderstanding the information that I'm sharing. And that might be a lesson for me, and that I need to reevaluate how I presented something. Or it might be that they just don't understand, and I need to go through that discussion to navigate a way for them to understand and present it in a new light.
I've modified the way that I presented information, or even like, you know, belief systems about movement based upon that community of physical therapists and how they share evidence. Like, for example, it is definitely got me more pro to the nuances of, you know, rounded back deadlifting. There's obviously context, and I think sometimes it gets oversimplified. Or I try to think of another really good example, the concept of joint centration, right? Which is something that I learned from very, very smart people, not super well supported anymore. You know, the ratio of, you know, push exercises to pull exercises, something that I talked extensively about within personal training sessions over many years, because I learned it from someone that is quite brilliant that I trust. Now, I don't think it's any longer supported by research, so I don't really think it matters, because we often used to have a lot of fear around doing too much push for fear of creating shoulder issues, shoulder impingement. It's another thing that we used to whip around like it was this big boogeyman. No longer seems like there's a lot of evidence to really support this idea. And it's because of people like you and some of the other positive names that I've shared, I've allowed my belief systems to shift how I instruct, how I use language with clients. One of the big lessons from all this for me, and I've been like this for a very long time, is I try to avoid any language that makes people feel broken or dysfunctional. There's something wrong with them. I always try to make them feel good. You know, you get the person who comes in and they talk to a doctor and like, oh, I have degenerative discs, right? It's like, listen, we all have degenerative discs. It's like, is that actually something that's like going to cause you pain and issues? But just being told that can make someone go from being comfortable with movement, feeling really robust in all the things you're capable of, and all of a sudden being scared and pain sensitized, which can completely change their experience with load and movement. So the language we use, critical. I think anybody listening at this point is probably really good at this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head there, and that's one of the ones that you can probably watch for. There's lots of information and research now looking at this and the impact that, normally it's called the clinician's words, but in general, anyone's words can have on individuals. I'm sure we've all been there where someone said something and it left that impact on us for a long duration. And like you said, whether it's a diagnosis like degenerative disc disease, or, you know, you're really weak and frail, anything like that can have a substantial impact on the person for the long term. And whether the intent is to encourage the person to do something, like for instance, you say someone's weak, your purpose is probably not to make them feel bad because they're not strong, but instead it's probably to get the person to strength train and focus on getting stronger. Understanding what your purpose is, how to change that wording, is huge. And one of the most important things that I've tried to really focus on when I share information online, because it's really easy to be short-sighted, say something really quickly, and then have a long-lasting effect, especially online where something's out there forever unless you take it down. And I'd rather not have that. And obviously, when you're looking at individuals who share information online, if you see a lot of negative talk, that can usually be another red flag.
I just thought of something that I'll use as an example. I've got a client. She, a few months back, had a knee replacement. She's in her late 40s, enjoys being active. You know, there's some injury history there stuff. She likes to do CrossFit. She knows she has to dial it back a little bit in order to, you know, manage load and volume. But we talk honestly about the individual movements and how her body responds to it with CrossFit, but I'm certainly not negative on CrossFit. She really enjoys it. Like, hey, cool, go and enjoy, right? I mean, people should check out your media for barbell sports stuff. Like the stuff, Sam is tall and you're freakishly strong. It doesn't even make sense how strong you are. Like, this is not human. But with this particular client, like, we've got a great relationship. So, you know, when we're talking about the replaced knee. I just call it, it's the bionic knee. That's literally what I call it. And she laughs, right? Because it doesn't have any sort of negative stigma. I'm not saying, oh, your weak knee, your broken knee, your blah, 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 whatever. Like, it's like, hey, you're bionic now, which, you know, it's a little bit of almost like a fun way of acknowledging the fact, okay, we got it. Like, some stuff is a little different for that leg because she's still regaining proprioception. She has no sensitization of what's going on in that knee because their nerves that literally are gone from the surgery, that stuff will very, very slowly regrow. So she's relearning some movement patterns.
No, absolutely. And that's a really common one that you see, especially in rehab, where people are like, oh, it's the bad knee. And so when they're doing stuff, it's like, you know, learning how to go up and down stairs. And it seems so insignificant, but it's actually something that is significant. It's like, okay, we want you to go up with the good, down with the bad, or whatever way you want to instruct it. But that terminology of bad and good can lead that person to viewing their knee as frail, bad, all those kinds of things, and lead them having longer lasting issues with it or having excessive fear around it, catastrophization. Whereas, yeah, make it bionic. That's badass. You're so cool. You're part robot. Or you can, you know, just call it involved or any of these kinds of things, whatever you want to do, or just, you know, left and right. But a lot of people just haven't considered that. And so hopefully, just like shifting that subtle language can be an easy and beneficial change.
I love it. I really enjoyed this conversation. So let's leave off with this. So you already told people, like, got ahead, because that wasn't planned. Like, I didn't know that, like, I have the title of your presentation, but I wasn't thinking about it in those terms. So we didn't plan that lead in earlier. But why should people come and attend this event? I really want people to understand just how good this is going to be, because these kind of things have really changed my life. So I'm hoping to sell more people on it. We're already, I think, around 100 registrations. And as of time of recording, I'll release this, will be like a little over 5 weeks away.
Yeah, so let's start with the event overall, and then I'll come to my topic. So for anyone listening, I'm attending the conference myself. I am so excited. If you look at the list of presentees, it is stacked. These are some of the best minds across coaching and business. The amount of information that's going to be presented over the course of the weekend is going to be so impressive. Like, essentially, you could come into this with relatively minimal knowledge on how to coach or run your business, and you could leave it having enough information to transform your ability to coach to a reasonably high level and to start running a sufficient and successful coaching business. I'm looking forward, you know, I feel pretty confident in my coaching abilities, but business-wise, I'm always looking to improve. So, you know, individuals like John Goodman, he's going to be a perfect person for me to come sit down and just take in everything he says. And there are tons of presenters where you're going to just get a vast amount of information that would be something that could take you years and years and years to get in a very short window of time. So I think it's a huge resource. If you're in the Western part of Canada, I don't know how you possibly can't attend it. If you're a coach or a clinician, like, I understand that, you know, things can be hard, but there's going to be lots of options as hopefully more will come out. But you got to try. Like, you know, for myself, I go and attend as much continuing education as possible. I've done it for years. Like you said, early on, I used to go and attend all of those things with Dean. We've actually attended numerous courses together, and it's huge. You learn so much from it, and it just expedites your education. And the more education you have on these topics gives you a greater window of ability to apply and grow as an individual and as a business, which is obviously what most people are going for. So I definitely say come attend. It'll be very beneficial. Also, hopefully it's going to be a lot of fun. Again, I'm coming out. Hopefully there's going to be some social events. You can come lift and train. Let's do it.
We got a social on a Friday night. So that'll be the first night, because it's a Friday, Saturday. So it'll be a social that night. You'll be able to, anybody coming in will have access to Evolve, which is probably about a 10 to 12 minute drive, south one anyway, the one that I contract out of, 10 to 12 minute drive away from the venue. But there's a ton of like food places and coffee and grocery stops right like walking distance. I was going to shout out Don Saladino's stuff. So if you guys, Don's been a guest on my podcast before. I think most people know who he is. Don has worked with half of Hollywood, it seems like. He works with Ryan Reynolds, okay? And Don has also built a 7-figure online business himself, challenges, programs, etc. He ran a gym in Manhattan for 15 years. he has worked with a lot of really successful people. He's been able to train people like Michael Bloomberg. And if I get it right, I think he trained Calvin Klein, all these Hollywood people. He's picking up on business wisdom from really smart, successful people. And his presentation is going to definitely be around the business side of stuff. So that one alone, Luka Hosevar is definitely going to do something that'll be either, we haven't decided yet, it's either going to be straight up coaching stuff or it's going to be business brand stuff. I've got a talk on building your brand, building authority, building credibility in your following. And Dean Somerset, his plan is to do something. He's been in the business 20 years. It's lessons from his 20 years. So I think he's excited about doing something that's a little different because he always does a lot of, you know, rehab type stuff, right? A lot of mobility type stuff. So I think you're going to get to see a different experience with Dean. And yep, you're going to see John Goodman sitting there taking notes, watching the presentations, having lunch with people, immersed. He's really excited to come out. And John doesn't like traveling or being away from family for these. And he's excited to be there. So we're pretty stoked. You had more.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, you know, I'm going to present. And I think that my presentation is going to be an excellent resource, whether you are a coach or a clinician. I'm going to try to condense down my, what I say, like 15 years of time in the fitness and rehab space into a rough hour. And obviously, it's not going to cover everything in existence, but I'm going to try to have you leave the presentation understanding the core principles as well as practical solutions that you can apply the following day. You're not going to leave trying to figure out the mysticism behind my magic, but instead, you're going to understand how you could do what I do on a daily basis. And I want you to feel confident in it. I'll provide resources that you can go and look at afterwards. They'll be in the slide notes. And at the end of it, you should be able to help a wide range of populations more than you did so coming in. So you'll have an expansive opportunity for clients. You'll be able to leave feeling like you can navigate difficult conversations because you understand how you can help individuals who are in pain, both to navigate their pain, but also to continue training, improving the quality of their life, their mental well-being, all the things that Andrew brought up earlier, and keep them doing the things that they enjoy. So it's going to be a very beneficial talk.
Man, I'm excited. I'm so glad. Like when I had a vision for rebooting this, because we did it in 2019, the plan was 2020. You were slated to be part of the 2020 lineup. That got ruined because of the world, and we're not going to talk about what happened. But it took us a little while to get this back going again. I'm really stoked. I mean, we had a few of our original intended speakers, like Christian Thibodeau was initially in, but then Swiss is the following weekend, and he wasn't able to commit to two traveling weekends in a row. No problem at all. We've been able to load up the lineup full of great people. Dr. Gabrielle Lyon was originally in our lineup. She has a book launch a few days later. Initially, her team greenlit her, but then traveling to Edmonton, anything gets disrupted, it could really disrupt stuff on her end. So she let us know in lots of time. And then I was able to secure Dr. Crystal Guevara, who is, you know, part of Renaissance Periodization. And I'm really excited to have Crystal. Crystal's a friend. She's wonderful. And then John Goodman was kind of the last piece that I was kept keeping a secret. We were just like in talks back and forth. And he was going to be a little delayed in committing. So the lineup is super. If you want more information, message me. I'll send you the link to everything. I'm really proud of what we've got. And I'm excited to see everybody there. And I'll also shout this too, because we just have to like green light it, but we're going to do it. We're also going to add a virtual attending event option as well. So it's going to take me a little bit to have that registration link open, but if you're listening and travel is just not possible, but you want to see the talks, we're going to add a virtual option too. So more details to come soon on my media. Shoot me a message, please. Where can they find you, Sam?
You can find me on Instagram at dr.samspinelli. And then it's honestly the best resource. If you want to contact me by email, I've got an old school email, thestrengththerapist@gmail.com. I've got a bunch of stuff in the works for some new branding, which we can maybe talk about when I'm there. But otherwise, yeah, those are the easiest resources.
Beautiful. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Please go follow Sam. Sam's a good friend, someone I trust, someone that I use extensively to learn more, that makes me a better practitioner with my clients, you know, better trainer. So hopefully go follow him. If you have someone in your world who you think this event, if you're planning on going, or you think you know someone who would really benefit, share this episode with them, share Sam with them, but share this. Maybe we can get them at this event and maybe it'll enrich their career. Thank you guys so much.